From KTOO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Alaska has no confirmed cases of monkeypox as of today, but state health officials are preparing a response for the disease. According to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, the U.S. has over 3,400 confirmed cases in 45 states so far. The World Health Organization declared it a global health emergency on Saturday.
We're expecting our first case any day now.
That's Alaska State Epidemiologist Joe McLaughlin. McLaughlin says so far 9 Alaskans have been tested for monkeypox and all were negative. He says the state currently has enough vaccine doses for just 50 people and only 5 courses of antiviral treatment.
Nationally, there's only a very limited supply of vaccine, and the vaccine has been distributed to states based on their population and based on the at-risk population in particular, as well as the number of cases that have already occurred in that particular state or jurisdiction.
McLaughlin says the federal government is expected to send more vaccine doses to Alaska soon. He says once the state sees its first case, additional vaccines and treatment courses are expected to come in fairly quickly. McLaughlin says the state will use its existing vaccine distribution network to get doses out to rural areas as needed. Monkeypox is a viral disease transmitted most often through skin-to-skin contact. It produces fever, aches, and fatigue, plus sometimes a rash resembling pus-filled blisters. McLaughlin says this outbreak has not been particularly deadly, with only 5 deaths reported worldwide. If you have symptoms, McLaughlin says it's important to reach out to a healthcare provider immediately and isolate yourself from others. He's also urging healthcare providers to test liberally, even in cases where they think monkeypox is unlikely. Alaska U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says she has tested positive for COVID-19. She made the announcement on social media today. In the statement, the Republican says she recently tested positive after experiencing flu-like symptoms. The statement did not specify the timing of the test. Murkowski says she will follow guidance and advice from doctors and will be quarantining at home in Alaska while continuing to work remotely. Murkowski is Alaska's senior U.S. senator. She is seeking re-election this year. Her campaign had posted online photos of events that Murkowski participated in Friday and Saturday in Fairbanks. A new report compiled by geotechnical engineers shows Skagway's busiest cruise ship dock is at significant risk for rock slides impacting the dock, moored ships, cruise ship passengers, and workers. At its latest meeting, the Borough Assembly asked the dock's owners, White Pass and Yukon Route, to stop using the portion of the dock in the active slide area. But the next day, municipal officials agreed to rearrange passenger foot traffic to try and reduce risk. KHNS's Mike Swayze spoke with Skagway Assemblyperson Reba Hilton about the report and the new pedestrian traffic flow agreement.
Assemblyperson Reba Hilton, thanks for joining us. Let's jump right into the big news coming from the rock slide area right above Skagway's busiest cruise ship dock, the railroad dock. The municipality brought in scientists to study the slide area. They released a report this week. What did that report say?
Here's one quote that got everyone's attention. It is our opinion that the slope conditions observed during our site visit display significant hazards to people and structures below the slope. That's scary, right? I used to work down there. I have friends that work down there. I have a family member that works down there.
I work down there, you know, 4 or 5 days a week, and I look up at that giant rock that's perched and has been moving at a couple of inches a year now, ready to come down at any time, and I think, what's my best escape route? That's what I think when I'm down there. It's incredibly frightening.
Absolutely. And when they first started monitoring this, you know, it was moving at the tune of 1 and 1.5 inches a year. And now this new report release said it's moving to 2.5 inches per year. So historically, we don't have more data than a few years old, unfortunately. But I mean, you hear those facts and it's pretty frightening.
Now, White Pass is claiming that the rocks that could cause damage on the railroad dock are coming from municipal land. So they're municipal property. How did the assembly respond to that?
Whew, man, it was hard. It was a 4-hour meeting. This was the hot topic. Basically, everyone is liable. We all know what's going on down there, and we are putting not only ourselves at risk, but we're putting all of our guests that come into this port that are docked on that side in risk, and it's unacceptable.
And so then the assembly said, well, let's ask White Pass to stop using the area next to the biggest slide and then tender people from the aft position. You had a meeting with municipal officials and with White Pass on Friday morning. What sort of agreement did you come up with?
What we did is we looked where there's most of the congestion with people congregating in the most dangerous spots down there. That's right below the rock slide where failure is going to happen at some point. So we've come up with a plan together to basically rearrange the flow of traffic down there. And it's going to be hard for people to wrap their head around it. It's late in the season, but we have to make changes because we know the risk now. It's on paper and it's eye-opening, and we had to do something about it.
And what are the changes going to look like?
The security area where people get back onto their ship will be moved further south. The whole area where the coffee shop is and where the shore excursion booths are, that will be moved, not the caboose itself. I believe the caboose will be closed down. M&M will be closed down. That circular turnaround will not be available to anyone but Smart Bus, but even Smart Bus will be loading further north, just north of the restrooms down there. And so Smart Bus will be using the turnaround area, but we're going to make that turnaround area smaller because we're going to open up to allow the flow of people to not bottleneck so much, but just to get them out of that area, and everyone will be meeting further north of the restrooms that are down there on the pier, which is also going to close off the parking lot to the small boat harbor, just the ones that actually line the boardwalk there.
And when do these new developments go into effect?
Immediately.
Assemblyperson Rebecca Hilton, thank you for filling us in on the latest at what's happening on the railroad dock. I appreciate it.
You betcha.
The State Labor Department says Alaska had about 7,900 more jobs last month than in June of 2021. But it says most industries still fell short of their job numbers 3 years earlier, before the pandemic. The Labor Department report shows the leisure and hospitality industry continued seeing strong year-over-year growth, with about 3,700 more jobs last month than in June of 2021. But the industry had about 4,600 fewer jobs than in June of 2019. Sectors that were at or above job levels from June 2019 included construction and healthcare. The Metlakatla Veterans Memorial Cemetery opened with a ceremony this afternoon. It's an occasion years in the making, as KRBD's Reagan Miller reports.
It's a million-dollar view for veterans and their families. To one side are Annette Island's forests, and to the other is the ocean. The hillside property is dotted with new concrete crypts, gravesites, pavement, and a memorial wall bearing commemorative plaques engraved with the names of those who have served. Crews broke ground on the site in mid-2020. Due to the location and size of the project, construction actually started in 2021 and finished this spring. Jeff Moran is a veteran himself and the treasurer of the Metlakatla Veterans Association. He says Metlakatla residents have been eager to see the project completed.
The community's always been 100% behind the veterans.
Plans for the cemetery were first laid out in 2017, when Metlakatla's tribe applied for and received some $3.1 million in grant funding from the state's Department of Veterans Affairs. The cemetery is the first in Alaska to be funded by the department. Metlakatla's mayor says that about 60 of the reserve's 1,600 residents are veterans. Hundreds more have served and died. Moran thinks the tradition of military service in Metlakatla is related to the community's Tsimshian culture.
So yeah, the community and the tribe itself is always, because Tsimshian culture has always been dominated as a warrior culture. And so every young man dreams of being a warrior for his family and his community. And of course, you know, the only way they can really do that nowadays is to enlist.
Mark McCarty is also a member of the Metlakatla Veterans Association. He gave input to the project, but doesn't think of the site as something for himself.
It's for us, you know, and ultimately it's for them. That's how I always see it, you know. Will I be buried there? Probably so. But I don't see it as that's my final resting place. That's for others. It's really their land first and foremost, so That's kind of how I see it.
Roy Brendable, another member of the Metlakatla Veterans Association, says it's about time that Metlakatla's veterans have a place of honor to spend eternity.
It was pretty exciting. It was a realization that needed to happen for it, you know. And I hope that every other community that is isolated, such as we are, York, I mean, Ketchikan and Metlakatla and all the other surrounding villages by way of once it by air and twice it by sea, and I hope it happens.
Moran says he's already heard from some families interested in having loved ones reinterred at the Memorial Cemetery. Reporting in Ketchikan, I'm Regan Miller.
Opioid overdoses in Alaska rose by more than two-thirds last year and more than doubled for young adults. Earlier this year, Alaska's Department of Public Health and Social Services launched Project GABE. It's a public health initiative aimed at reducing the number of opioid overdoses by equipping people throughout the state with medication to reverse potentially fatal overdoses. The project is named for Gabe Johnston, the son of a Sitka public health nurse who died from an opioid overdose in January. At first, the project started out in the fisheries industry in southeast Alaska. Public health officials worked with volunteers to put opioid response kits in seafood processing plants and on fishing vessels throughout the region. They also provided training on how to administer naloxone. Since then, Project GABE has expanded to other fisheries-focused regions like Bristol Bay and also trains and equips individuals in southeast. Erin Michaels is the public health nurse for Wrangell and Petersburg.
So if your organization, or if you're a person, an individual, and you're interested in getting free naloxone kits, there's no charge with them. It's a spray, so it's non-invasive. You literally just put it in the nostril and push the plunger, and then you wait several seconds, and then if you need to, you can re-administer it again. It has the instructions in the kit, so it's pretty foolproof. Even if you can't read, you can look at the pictures, and you can still get the impression of what's going on, and it could save a life. And so we're just trying to destigmatize it, let people know it's available for people anywhere.
Kits contain two doses of naloxone, information on drug recovery, and how to administer the medication, gloves, and a CPR face shield. And that is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, July 25th, 2022. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.